Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio. Sponsor today, Omega Processing Solutions. It's never too early to start planning for the holiday season. And we're now recording this in November, November the 2nd. That means that in 22 days, yes, 22 days, Black Friday will be here. In 2015, that marked the ninth straight year that gift cards were the most requested gift item. Are you a small business owner? Well, you could be missing out on those sales opportunities by not having an established gift card program. Omega Processing offers customized gift card and loyalty programs built for your business. So if you're a small business owner, you're not offering gift card programs, you should call Omega Processing. It's an easy-to-use gift card and rewards program, and they can help make your holiday shopping season brighter. Contact them, customer service, 866-888-9724. I'll say that again, 866-888-9724. That's extension 7 for Omega Processing, which is the sole sponsor of For Thomas Matters Radio. Today in the For Thomas Matters Radio podcast studio, I have frequent guest Darren Murner in the studio today. Darren, how are you?
Good, man.
So what we're going to do is talk about just the election cycle in general. We've talked a lot about the For Thomas election cycle. Omega Processing has really been kind of at the forefront to allow us to do that and sponsor this podcast. But Darren and I are going to talk about just what it means to have an election cycle in 2016. It's a long way away from when Darren ran for Thomas City Council in 2000. Was that 2008?
I don't even remember now.
That was 8 years ago.
No, it's crazy.
We're a little bit older, got a little bit less hair, probably a little bit soggier in the midsection.
Yes,
but
definitely.
Tell me about, I guess, your just overall, you ran for Thomas City Council in 2008. Talk about like what the climate was like. I guess not just necessarily in Fort Thomas, but just overall, what was it like, you know, being in the election cycle, but also kind of paying attention to the news in that, you know, system in that 2008 cycle?
Yeah, well, I mean, 8 years isn't 80 years. Come on, Mark, you're making me sound really old here, but I don't know that it's changed a ton other than that everything's just getting more divisive, right? I mean, everything's choosing off even more sides. You know, fortunately, I think most of the local races, there's not enough, you know, there's not a Fox and MSNBC that can pit each other against or pit candidates against each other or followers of one city council member against another. So, you know, maybe there's a good thing that there's some information gaps at the local race level for that reason. But it feels like in 8 years, I mean, we just continue to get more and more divisive. Social media obviously plays a big role.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to really, I think that's probably the main thing. So 2008, we're about 4 years into Facebook at that point versus now, you know, we're...
Yeah, I mean,
12 years into Facebook.
I remember having a Facebook page, but I mean, there was very little interaction on it. Maybe that was my issue and I didn't run it well. But I just feel like now it's like social is the lead. And, you know, it's really crazy how much I was actually just thinking about this the other day. I couldn't tell you the last time I watched the local news, like local television news at 10 or 11.
So how do you get your election
well,
news
it's,
right
it's
now?
It's all Twitter. And I mean, you know, and I feel like I'd make a conscious effort to include both sides
of
the opinion in my news feed. So, I mean, I have people that, I mean, literally they turn me off every time they send a tweet out, you know,
and do you respond to them?
No, I really try not to just because it's like, I feel like nothing good ever happens. And multiple times I've started messages and then just deleted it because it's like, I want to be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. And I feel like as soon as I hit send on that message, I know I'm going to be a part of the problem. So I just delete it. But yeah, I mean, Twitter didn't really exist at that time, or it definitely wasn't. I'm sure it existed, but
it came around in like 2008.
Yeah, so it was, I don't know, you know, exactly when it started, but I mean, it clearly wasn't a player in that election cycle. And but I was thinking about that very thing, where it's like I don't watch local news, and part of what had me thinking about that was more just about I watch my parents and my in-laws obsess over the stuff that shows up on evening news.
And I think
they're in their 70s. Yeah, 70s and late 60s. And I just think about how, they're living and dying off of, some gun violence that happened in some part of the city that they've never even been to. And I'm just like, I'm not even aware a lot of times about some of those things. And I think I'm okay with that. I'd rather, I think, focus more on some of the issues than opposed to, the wreck that happened on I-74 in Brown County. I think part of it is irrelevancy. I think our generation and the generation younger than us, I think they're pretty okay. Like, it doesn't feel like it's valuable information to them.
So obviously, and you talked about this at the beginning when you started talking about elections in 2016, how they're more divisive. Conceivably, with what you just said, which is, some of the
becomes data, an echo chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see that growing to a bigger fever pitch in 2020 now? I mean, do you think there could possibly be an election that is more contentious than this?
Well, I think part of the reason why this election is so contentious is just the two people that are being represented, right? I mean, the Republican Party spent 30 years vilifying Hillary Clinton. So, I mean, it's like hard for people. I mean, she's public enemy number one. I mean, I can't think of someone who would have been a more, divisive candidate to throw at the Republican, the establishment than Hillary Clinton. And then, Donald Trump just, it's like every day I check Twitter to see what's he said today, because he said something dumb at some rally somewhere, and I don't think he really even remotely cares about it.
So
I think because of that, I think the candidates create that. But I mean, very clearly the social media feeds off of that. I mean, they live and die off of the next stupid thing that Donald Trump has said or the next batch of emails that came out on Hillary Clinton.
So we talked about this a little bit before we got started recording, and I'm not a pollster. This is just my gut on what I think is could happen, or basically two scenarios. So the polls right now are pretty much even, and some polls have up Trump and some have up Hillary. Like, I don't think they can pinpoint what's going to happen. My thought is that this is what may happen. So I think a lot of Republicans are disenfranchised with their choice, right? Democrats are probably, but to a lesser extent.
To a lesser extent, yeah.
But at the end of the day, you can throw in Gary Johnson and Jill Stein and Evan McMullen.
A few percent, yeah.
At the end of the day, it's going to be two candidates that the majority of people are going to be choosing between. So I think if the majority decide to pull the lever for Donald Trump, it's going to be less about voting for Donald or against Hillary. But I think a vote for Donald Trump says we don't like the system and we want the system to be torn down. And I feel like that could happen if he's elected. So I think that's one scenario. The other scenario is Hillary wins because her basket of deplorables weren't enough to carry for Donald Trump. And, the polls that we had a month ago, which had Hillary up by a lot.
Well, I mean, to that point, too, I mean, the polls, I mean, I remember you and I talking about polling on a previous podcast where it's like they picked, I don't even remember who it was running against Bevin now at this point, but who was Conway?
Yeah, Conway.
Yeah, so, I mean, they had Conway leading that entire gubernatorial race, right? So I don't know if it was, the state of Kentucky is some sort of weird microcosm or if just across the board polling is broken. And when I think like that's constantly in the back of my mind when I read some new poll that came out one way or the other and I see movement, it's like, all right, the video surfaced on Donald Trump and, it moved 10 points towards Clinton and then, the latest batch of emails, the FBI reopened a probe, and it like swings back towards Donald Trump. And it's like, I find it hard that at this point, you know, when you've spent literally months listening to all of the crap that has happened, you know, in this election, that literally polls could swing by 10% in, you know, in a matter of 2 days on one piece of information. You know, is it like, really, is the video the thing that put you over the top on Donald Trump? You know, like, I'd made my mind up on Donald Trump before that happened, right? Or really, is the 18th batch of WikiLeaks emails the thing that put you over the top for Hillary Clinton, right? Like, I do wonder if there's like this, you know, we've just reached a point where the polling is irrelevant to elections. Now, I don't know if that's the case. Maybe it really does come in exactly the way the polling has kind of been trending over the last month, and Hillary wins, and it's the states that we expected, and maybe there was a surprise here or there, and like, but by and large, it went the way it went. Then the question is like, well, what's weird about the state of Kentucky? You know, how did it miss
gubernatorial race that badly? I think maybe, and I have that same underlying thought too. When I read a poll, I don't take it. I can't take it for face value because it's been so wrong here. And then I have to question to myself, well, am I just looking at this in a skewed capacity because Kentucky's been so bad at it? Or, you know, and then you bring into other biases. Like, everybody's got a bias in some capacity or, you know, whatever. Yeah, and it's impossible to know what everybody's hot button issues are, what their agendas may be. And some polling outfits may have an agenda and some may not. Right. But I think that's because there's so many of them.
Right.
It's hard for the general public to decipher what's a good poll and what's not.
Right.
And I really don't think there's any way that we're going to know what happens until hopefully we know Tuesday night.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully.
I'm sick of the election season. I'm sure you are too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think everyone's ready for it to be done and over with. Yeah.
Even locally. So we transition a little bit away from the national conversation to locally. Signs have been up since what?
Probably early October.
Yeah, and that's another issue that kind of got brought up here in Fort Thomas. So I remember when Adam Meyer was on Fort Thomas City Council, and he was only on for about a year before he got an appointment with Governor Bevin and had to resign. But during his tenure, there was a Supreme Court ruling that said that cities and towns could not dictate when and how property owners put up signs in their yards. So he brought up the fact, you know, there's been a Supreme Court ruling, First Amendment rights. We can't tell our residents when they can put up political signs. Right now, and before that Supreme Court ruling, there was a 60-day window. You can't have election signs. I think it was 60 days.
Yeah.
He brought it up. Hey, we need to get this changed. City did not follow through with it, and so it was still on the books. So that created a gray area for some candidates because there was a 60-day window on Fort Thomas City Council books that really was, according to the Supreme Court, unconstitutional. So some candidates abided by it, some did not. Now, who's right there?
Well, the interesting thing I think about that is like, dear God, I mean, 60 days before the election, like, I just think of it from a business standpoint. It's like, if I'm investing $500 in yard signs, you know, like, I'm probably going to try to deploy those no more than a month before the election. Because otherwise, it's like, I don't know. I just don't know that it's really, you know, are they still going to be there the week before the polls? And I think local elections, that's probably as meaningful as anything, you know, because it's like name recognition and...
Well, so
yeah, I don't know. I mean, 60 days, it's like, I can't imagine a period where it's 60 days seems like a lot.
Well, because of that gray area, I was going to take this issue up. I didn't want to insert ourselves into the middle of an election story.
Right.
But we'll clarify this with city officials going forward. All right, what are the actual rules? Are we going to get rid of this ordinance that we've previously had on the books, or are we going to keep it?
Yeah.
And what does that mean? So after the election, we're going to clarify that. It's likely our city attorney is going to give city staff some recommendations on what to do. I want to, after we write that story, I want to make a plea. And my plea to local officials is...
I'm excited to hear this, by the way.
Drum roll. Let's stop. Let's Mark will start this. But let's put a detente period on the election signs.
Can you say detente? Is that like...
Yeah, I can spell it too.
Okay.
I think it's a French word, actually. But let's put a stop to it, because I think people get sick of them. I know politicians don't like doing them, but they feel like they have to, because if your opponent is doing it, you've got to do it too.
Right.
So if I can bring some sanity to the...
Well, it's almost like a Facebook-like, right? You know, it's like, how many yard signs do I see from my competitor? I mean, it's just natural. I think we've always done that.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, from the national elections all the way down to local elections.
But if I can bring some sense to it and just say, hey, listen, guys, you know, it sucks for the people that are printing the signs. Like, I don't...
The sign printing industry is going to come and, like, burn down Fort Thomas Matters because...
it sucks for them. But you know what? Like, honestly, and maybe I'm doing it from a selfish perspective, because it's a top three issue that politicians generally come to me during election cycles, because they need things, they want things, you know, they want their op-ed up or whatever. But it's a top three complaint that I'm having to hear from them all the time is... sign issues, whether it be, this is against the ordinance, did you see my sign got stolen? Like, I don't want to cover that. Yeah. I don't, it's not interesting, it's not newsworthy, it's pettiness.
Yeah.
And I want to put a stop to it. I think politicians would be on board with that. If I could get everybody to say, all right, I can't control everywhere.
Yeah.
If I could get everybody to stay out and say, in Fort Thomas, we're not doing election signs.
I think the only thing I remember, because I was like, man, really? That, I mean, is there that many issues about signs? I mean, I've obviously heard the stories of, like, somebody defacing somebody else's sure. yard sign, or, you know, we wake up one morning and, like, all the signs for so-and-so candidate has disappeared out of yards, you know?
Which,
like, I know that stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like, it does feel petty. And the only thing, but I do remember from my election in 2008, I did have signs. I think I was
what color were they?
Person. I actually did yellow, because it seems like everything's red, white, and blue, you know, which I understand. It's like, I'm pro America too. Go America. You know, but it's like, I wanted something that's going to stand out and look different, you know? So I went with yellow, because I was hoping it's like, oh, the yellow signs, you know, that's
when did you get them
different.
Up? Do you remember?
I think it was within 30 days. I mean, the thought of
do you have any left?
60 days was like not even a concept. I had some left. They're not, I tossed them all after the election.
So you're not going to run for Fort Thomas City Council?
No. Won't be doing that again.
Why not?
I have bigger things going on right now. I just maybe someday I would again.
Why did you originally want to run?
What spurred me on at the time was really about retail development, and I just felt like you know, we had a couple high profile businesses that I felt like the community was rallying around that you know, had some crappy real estate issues, kind of pull the rug out from under them. And one was the wine shop at the end of Lumley. Right there at the corner of Fort Thomas.
Where
and,
Walking
and
Horse is now.
Which is where Walking Horse is now. And it was a husband and wife team. I mean, it's everything you could have asked for in a local retail store. They added to the community. You know, it was we met people that we are still in community with today at that store. And they kind of had the rug pulled out from under them. And then Siani's, which was the coffee shop across the street. And both of those things happened within like...
Where was that?
A month. It was in one of the three houses next to Ken Bowman's
okay.
Frame shop.
And, so what happened there?
Well, I think what happened there, and this is, you know, mostly rumor, but sure, from everything that I've heard, it was National City at the time. This is pre-financial crisis, pre them getting bought by PNC Bank. Actually had an agreement to buy those three houses there. And I don't think Ken Bowman's was a part of that. I think it was the three kind of past Ken Bowman's. And they were going to put another bank in the middle of town, you know. And it was like, so there wasn't an opportunity for her to continue her business in that location. And she said, hey, I'm done with this and I'm moving on. So anyway, both of those things happened within like a month. And there were multiple people that got together and actually formed a little working group to say like, hey, we can't let this happen. I mean, these businesses are important and we want to contribute, or we want businesses like that to contribute to the fabric of our community. And, you know, fortunately since that time, you know, we've got 15 North in town, we got Top This in the center of town, you know, Midway's been purchased and has been redeveloped and that's thriving business now. You know, it's like Fort Thomas Coffee is right there at the end of the street.
The pub has evolved.
And when you look at those businesses, they contribute to the community. And that's the kind of things that I think we should support as a community. Not, you know, and we all have banking relationships in this town, but do we need another bank? And, you know, fortunately, the trend in banking is not more retail locations. It's actually less at this point. So not really as big of an issue. But, it, you know, it seemed like there for a while, the only thing that wanted to locate in the center of town was, you know, financial services of some sort, you know, whether that's an investment advisor, a bank, or an insurance company. And it's like, you know, we want to be able to, you know, play in our community, not just live and work in our community.
Yeah. So that's why you ran.
That's why I ran.
Yeah. Why do you think?
Think that's changed. I think that's changed a lot. That's part of the reason why, you know, we've got a lot of momentum, I think, in a positive direction. And so.
Well, I don't want you to signal out a specific candidate here. So just a general, you know, royal we here. Why do you think people run for Thomas City Council? Why we have 9 people running this time, which I think is the most since when you ran in 2008, and we had like 10 or 11. Generally, when things are good, you know you don't have a lot of challengers. Why do you think we have a lot of Why do you think we have a lot of people running for Thomas City Council?
Well, I mean, I think there's still some things that people are, you know, they know we can do better, right? I mean, we've got some assets that are deteriorating right now, and I mean, the really obvious one is the VA homes, and I mean, we've talked at length about that on these podcasts as well, and I know you've written a ton on Fort Thomas Matters about that. And honestly, I wrote a ton about that a long time ago on Fort Thomas Matters. So, I mean, it's a story that just seems to never die. I'm hoping that we can talk about it as a success in the future. But, I mean, that's one example. The Midway District, you know, when you look at some of the, you know, challenges, honestly, and, I mean, just, there. And you know, there's been some investment and we've got some momentum, but it's like there's still some properties that just aren't contributing to that community. And I think the other big piece of it is we still continue to have a pretty massive influx of people into this community that don't have second, third, fourth generation connection to Fort Thomas. And I know that might be shocking to some people that, you know,
Fort Thomas is a big city. We have 16,000 people plus here.
Yeah. I mean, it's in terms of a bedroom community, it's one of the largest, you know, and I think other than maybe Independence or Florence, which I don't know that you would consider those bedroom communities.
Definitely not Florence, but
maybe Independence. Yeah. You know, it's the largest in Northern Kentucky. And, you know, I think when people move here that don't have that long connection, they look at those assets. I think it's easy for people that have been second, third generation. You know, I had lived in Fort Thomas for maybe 3 or 4 years at the point where I decided to run. And I think David Cameron's a great example of that this year, where it's like, you know, he and I have talked a couple of times, you know, partially because he reached out to me to learn about what to do and what not to do and how to be a successful candidate. And I see the same things that I was saying when I moved into town are the same things that he's saying that he wants to change, which is like from an outsider's perspective, when you move in, there are tremendous assets, you know, beyond just the location and the school system. You know, like when you look around, it's like with 16,000 people that live in this community, we can do better than what we're doing. And I think to some degree, there's some complacency that's set in for people that have second, third generation Fort Thomas residents. And I think as long as there are people continuing to move in, which by the way, I think is great, you know, it only increases everybody's property values. It only increases the level of commitment in our school systems. You know, so like, I think that needs to be something that we continue to support and encourage. I think as people move in though, with that perspective, they feel this desire to get involved because they know it can be better than what it is.
So let's kind of tie a ribbon on this. We've talked about the national election in 2016. We've talked about the differences between the election in 2008 when you ran in 2016, as we have it right now. How do you think ultimately, and maybe this is some of the advice that you gave to David that you talked about, how do you think this local election season shakes out?
Are we talking just Fort Thomas City Council, or are we talking
I mean, do you think, regionally? Let me put it in a different way. Obviously, this is probably the most coverage that a Fort Thomas City Council race has ever had. So in 2008, ballot position mattered a great deal because you might have had, you know, your cursory website or your Facebook page where you were talking about your issues. And then, of course, the recorder will come in and do, you know, one article right. and give you a paragraph about who you
quote.
Are.
They give me a quote. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, guess what? They have not changed their coverage because that recently came out. But, you know, we've been covering Fort Thomas City Council election since, I think, January.
Yeah. Well, as soon as people, the filing deadline.
Yeah, the filing deadline's January. Yeah. We started covering it then. We had introduction op-eds. We've done a podcast with every council person. We've done two debates.
Yeah.
We hosted one and moderated one.
And I'm sure there are still a lot of people who are like, I have no idea who I'm going to vote for. That I wish there was more information available for.
Well, that's kind of my question. Do you think that with the amount of coverage that is there, that ballot position is not going to be the end-all be-all? Or do you think at the end of the day, you know, there's not a whole lot that we can do. People are going to vote based on ballot position and name recognition. What do you think?
I mean, I think there's a combination of factors. I mean, ballot position obviously is a huge factor for local races. And even though the coverage is really strong around the city council candidates, and, you know, I think there is a big segment of the population that read those things and formed some opinions. You know, there's probably another segment that it's really about personal relationships. You know, I know this person is name recognizable, or this person's a neighbor, or I've done business with this person. So, you know, that's how I'm going to cast my votes. And there's still a segment that like just aren't going to be informed, right? They're going to show up because they're there to vote for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, right? Because that's the other big factor in a local election.
Well, probably,
is it tied to a presidential? Is it a presidential election year or not? So I think there are three or four of those things, and unfortunately, there's still a segment of the population that just doesn't look to inform themselves on local races. And, you know, I'm guilty of that as well. When I start thinking about like county judge races, it's like, I have no idea how I'm going to make decisions on some of those.
And that's where people call Mark and say, Mark, how do I vote?
Exactly.
And I,
right?
By the way, I don't tell people how to vote.
So, I mean, we're all guilty of that to some degree. And, but I do hope there's enough information that people have worked to try to inform themselves and they make good decisions.
Do you remember what the vote totals were in 2008? I mean, do you know where you came in?
I want to say I was like 3,400 or 3,500 votes, and I finished 7th out of
11.
Out of 11 or 12. I think there.
Let me ask you this.
Because I think 13, if 13 people registered, then there's a primary. Is
right.
that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So then there was 12.
It's double plus
12
one.
Candidates.
Double plus one.
12 candidates. I remember I finished just outside the top six.
So let me ask you this. So I think, obviously, we've given the most coverage during this election, but we did, you know, I thought we did a really good job in 2014 too. Didn't do as much, but we did a lot. Right. And at that time, we had 7 people running for 6 spots. Adam Meyer had the number one ballot position. He worked probably the hardest, campaigned the most, and got the sixth most votes. He edged out a Fort Thomas, you know, born and bred guy that is my age in Anthony Benomini, and he beat him. I think if Fort Thomas Matters wasn't there in 2014, I don't know that Adam Meyer
would have gotten elected.
Wins.
Yep.
And he barely won. Yep. I mean, he won by like less than 100 votes. So in 2008, do you think that's the coverage that Fort Thomas Matters, if you extrapolate the coverage we do in 2016 to 2008, do you think that helps you? Do you think that puts you over the edge?
Oh, I think it could
because
have.
Because you worked hard. I wasn't there to cover it.
Right.
But I know that, you know, not a lot of candidates went out and got the endorsement of the fire department or,
right.
You know, did the things that you do. Do you right. think that puts you over the top?
I think it could have. I mean, I think the other thing is just demographics, right? I mean, if what we are saying is true, and I mean, there's not the level of data on this, at least that I'm aware of. There may, maybe if we really dug into the census information, we could find this. But, you know, is there information out there that is demonstrating the fact that, you know, we do have more first-generation Fort Thomas people? Because I think that's the other, what you're speaking of there with the Adam Meyer example is that whole like, hey, I've been here for three generations and these people have name recognition and I grew up with this person. And so like, it's not even, I'm not even going to give it a second thought.
Right? Sure.
Versus like as more and more first generation Fort Thomas people move to this community, you know, I think that's where the role that Fort Thomas Matters plays in terms of, you know, people going out and getting educated on what are the issues and where do people stand on these issues, you know, I think comes more into play. But I think from 2008 to 2016, absolutely would have had an impact.
So, and by the way, I have no idea how this election is going to shake out. I don't know who's going to win. There's not enough, like I think you said that, there's not enough data to really right. be able to tell what works and what doesn't. I'm sure you can kind of point, if somebody's asking you for personal advice, you can kind of point them in the right direction, but ultimately you don't know either what's effective and what's not.
No.
So at the end of the day, I don't know what's happening either. So please stop asking me. I really don't know. And it may just come down to ballot position. It may come down to name recognition and hopefully not. Hopefully that we've done a decent job as, you know, the media source that, you know, people can kind of go back and read and learn about the candidates that they ultimately have or will elect to represent them. So any signing off thoughts?
No, man, I think we covered it. That was pretty good.
Okay.
That was more than I thought we were gonna talk about.
Well, so. It generally, you know, figures its way out through the course. We set a loose agenda when we start talking about these things. So hopefully we didn't offend anybody or
I'm sure we offended somebody.
Oh,
Mark.
Sure.
I'm
oh,
sure.
Always. I'm not going to name any names, but
I'll just be glad at this point next week when hopefully it's all done and yeah. we understand. Maybe the next conversation we have is about, you know, maybe what new person is on council.
Maybe.
Or maybe, you know.
Maybe they go
where the country's
six.
Headed yeah. after that. So,
well, for Darren Murner, this is Mark Collier. Darren, do you want to give a quick plugs to your businesses that you have?
Sure. Borderlands in Newport on Mama Street. So if anybody's working from home and they want some community, they can check that out. It's the border.land if you're going to the website. And then one other plug for Cloverleaf, which is the new startup that we launched in August in a beta mode. And that's cloverleaf.me. And it's really about helping people find the right fit with their work and work cultures and helping them be better individuals inside of that work culture.
And you can find a job. You can post a job. There's a tab at the top of FortThomasMatters.com. It says, find a job.
Find a job. That's pretty easy.
So that is Cloverleaf. So for Darren, Cloverleaf, Borderlands, this is Mark Collier, Fort Thomas Matters Radio.